You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The holidays are upon us again with the promise of celebrations, gifts, and decorations, and perhaps some dangers as well. So we have invited Winona Russell, our favorite industrial hygienist, back to our show to talk about the latest health hazards to watch out for. And we'll also take a look at the Oakland Artist Building fire and what it might mean for local artists. Winona is the founder and president of Arts, Crafts, and Theater Safety and the author of Pick Your Poison, How Our Mad Dash to Chemical Utopia is Making Lab Rats of Us All. It's from Wiley. And, of course, she will be taking your calls at 212-433-9692 or answering questions that have been posted on our show page at wmyc.org/Lopate. You can also write to us on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Winona, we've talked in the past about the relative merits of real Christmas trees versus artificial trees. Do you have any recommendations for what's safest now?
Well, one of the problems you have is getting an identity on the various chemicals that are in the synthetic ones. There are real possibilities of a safer artificial tree. The natural tree has two problems. One of them is that lovely pine smell, which does react with pollution levels of ozone to actually create a little formaldehyde in your house.
Oh, great.
So it's not that lovely odor is not all cracked up. Well, all but is cracked up.
Well,
to
I'm
be.
Going to stop getting close to sniff them.
Well, it's so small that it's pretty much negligible, unless you're an asthmatic or allergic to
but
it.
As but as the tree dries fire, out, you have those hot lights.
Huge,
is that a problem?
Huge fire problem. I think the average is like 240 fires a year.
Wow.
If just from Christmas trees alone. And the drier they get, the worse they are. Fortunately, we're going to LED lights, which are much lower in temperature. They really don't heat up, so there's a little less chance of a fire. But if they're on a cheap string, then you could have an electrical source for the fire.
This a new kind of holiday light that's being marketed this year, laser projection lights. How are they used?
That is amazing to me. Because if I have a jurisdiction over a theatrical production or something like that where we're worried about safety stuff, and if you're going to use lasers in that show or you want to do an outdoor laser exhibit, you have to get permits to do that. But apparently, an individual consumer can buy a laser light that literally can put the eye out in a pilot, and that doesn't seem to be a problem. I have no comprehension of why that should be.
So they're projected from the ground, but they can go as high as a plane?
Yeah, laser lights are an organized light, so they don't just dim out really, you know, but with distance the same way that an ordinary light does. They can go quite a ways. And an organized light going right into your eye. I mean, they even tell you those little pointers that we use when we lecture. Don't put it right into somebody's eye because it can damage the retina.
What about all the lights that people put around their homes?
Well, hopefully the amount is small because those are little point lights. But there is now evidence that household levels of LED, the frequencies that are in the range of the white and the blue, are capable of causing retinal damage.
So you just told me LEDs are okay, and now it turns
out...
Well,
it depends on what we're looking at. If we're looking at fire hazards, they're better. But we with those small lights on the tree, I don't see that there could be a problem with the retina. But we are... Well, remember when mercury vapor lights came out? Oh, they were going to be wonderful. And then, of course, they found out that they could cause cancer and sunburns. So they have to put a special filter to make sure that they take the UV rays out of that total spectrum. Well, now we're beginning to learn some similar things about LED lights, and I'm very worried about the show people that I'm dealing with because they deal with really strong LED lights.
But what about the LEDs that we're using in our homes, in our lamps, replacing incandescents?
That's the ones that were used in the tests, and they were capable of causing retinal damage in rats at household levels within a matter of days.
Well, I'm hoping that all the rats in my house go blind from
That's
looking
good.
At the lights,
yeah.
But I'm
that
worried about me
thing.
And loved ones.
You could have three blind mice.
What about toys and other gifts? We often hear about things that might be dangerous, especially small things that children might put in their mouths. Have we pretty much figured out what is safe and what isn't safe?
Oh, we have figured that out long ago. The problem is nobody does it. There are toy regulations that are very clear about the size of things, the paint on things, how strong it has to be, if it's going to be breakable, so on. All those things are set up in the ASTM toy standards that are now in the Consumer Product Safety Commission's regulations. But other countries still send things here, and we have some people manufacturing here as well that don't really follow all the rules and don't really check all the standards. So you have to be careful. And, of course, my concern also is individual craftspeople and schools that teach people to make things, because sometimes they don't realize that if you're going to have a student who wants to make something that's going to be a toy, they better know all the regulations, too, because they're going to be responsible if they sell that or if it hurts someone.
Are the plastics safe if you stick them in your mouth? What about the paint on wooden toys?
Well, the paint on any toy is, if it's for young children, is regulated. The paint on adult stuff is not, but the paint for children's toys is regulated and has to be essentially lead-free. So that's a good thing. The plastics also cannot have lead fillers in them for children's products, because those leach out. See, a plastic is not an item that is like forever. You know, they get brittle or they get gooey or they fall apart. So the ingredients migrate to the surface. Things start to break down into their precursor chemicals, and we have difficulties with keeping the plastic where it wants to be. So that's why if a child touches it or works with it, the phthalates are coming to the surface. Some of them are going into the air. The brominated fire retardants now are found in the dust in every house. And if there's a lead filler, it comes to the surface. When there were these lead mini blinds that were recalled a number of years ago, the Consumer Product Safety Commission calculated that a child touching just a square inch of those mini blinds once a day would raise their blood lead significantly. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, plastics just are not stable over long periods.
Are they still mostly made from petrochemicals?
Well, it doesn't really matter. You know, an oil is an oil, a wax is a wax. Whether they say, oh, this comes from soy, well, that's nice if you think that we don't want to be digging up oil from the ground and it's better to grow soybeans with pesticides, then that's your choice. I mean, I think that's just fine. But if you think that the oil from the soybean is any safer than the oil from the ground, it's just oil. So once you have made that into a plastic, you have the same problems.
I'm speaking with Manona Russell, our favorite industrial hygienist. Hygienist, or do we say hygienist?
Got me, Lieutenant. I really don't know. I just know that people think I clean teeth in a factory.
Manona is the founder and president of Arts, Crafts, and Theater Safety, author of Pick Your Poison, How Our Mad Dash to Chemical Utopia is Making Lab Rats of Us All. And we invite your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at wnyc.org/lopate. And Manona is kind enough to answer questions that are left there that we don't wind up even getting to on the air.
I'll get to them all.
You can also write to us on Facebook, or you can tweet us at Leonard Lopate. One of last season's most popular Christmas gifts, hoverboards, made news because they had a tendency to catch fire.
No kidding.
So they're banned from New York City subways now.
Yes. I think it helps to step back from the hoverboard problem a little bit further and kind of look at all of the battery things, all the things where you have a power source connected with it. I mean, if you have a Prius and you're in an accident, hazmat gets called to haul your car away.
Because that's a lithium ion
yes,
battery.
Because it's a big damn
battery. But aren't they the same batteries that went in the Samsung phones?
You've got it. Here's the thing. A battery is an enclosed system where you have two highly incompatible chemicals together so that they can slowly react to generate a current on demand. Whenever you have two chemicals that are really going to react that way, in the same thing, if there's a damage or if we keep trying to make them smaller or thinner or we
which
risk,
is the goal.
Which is the goal. Then you risk the two chemicals coming together suddenly. Something corrodes between them. There's an accident that breaks it or bends it or does something. Now you have a really big problem because that reaction is going to run away.
And is it only applied to lithium-ion batteries?
You can just take your AA's out the same way. They are all the same basic principle. Now, lithium-ion has a much greater potential to do that because of the electron potential. But they all can do this. I mean, if you want to start a fire, all you need is any battery.
And when you are going to the store and choosing between one of the name brand AAA, AA batteries and some store brand, is one any better than the other?
Well, they're nice big round batteries, and they're very unlikely to do this. It's when we start fooling with them and we make them very big or we make them very thin or we make them very small. We start messing with the basic idea that we've been using for so many years that we get into the most trouble.
Listeners have been calling in or writing in. One asks about 3D printed plastics. Are they any better or worse?
You got a plastic factory in somebody's house. It's just the same stuff. And I couldn't believe that someone did a study where they made a container out of ABS plastic and they put fish in it and the fish died. Well, I mean, really, what did you expect? Of course, that's not even a controlled industrial system. They're not going to be safe. They're plastics.
Isaac from Brooklyn, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I worked for a Palo Alto company, Worldcentric, that made plastic forks and knives from polylactic acid, PLA, mm-hmm. that they said can compost in a high heat, in, you know, industrial composter. So isn't that a safe version of plastic?
Isn't that lovely for the earth? But it has really very little to do with you, because when you're using it, what we want to know is what else is in there, because you're going to have plasticizers and dyes and fillers and all kinds of other stuff. So the corn will go back to being corn. Are why are we thinking this way? Oil is dead plants and animals squashed together. It's a perfectly natural material when you really stop and think about it. The earth has had it around for a long, long time. But if you like the idea of a renewable resource and things turning back into corn-like stuff in the compost, that's fine. But it doesn't have anything to do with the user.
We're going to get another caller here, Roberta from New Jersey. Hi.
Hi there.
Go ahead.
Hello. Oh, yes. My question is about the LED lights that are used on car headlights, which are very glary. They're very bright. And I do have macular degeneration and slight cataracts, so I find them very annoying when driving in the evening. I'm wondering, is there any regulation on these lights and how bad are they for the retina?
Well, like everything that comes out new, it comes out without toxicity studies or without safety studies. It just does. They will check to see if the light will shatter or burn or something. But what you're asking, the LED lights came out on the market without any of that information. And I agree with you. Those lights are powerful. I have no doubt that serious damage could be gotten. So, I mean, obviously, just don't be looking at them because those are really powerful lights.
And a listener says New York City has a pilot program for LED streetlights, but haven't other cities banned them?
I don't. Have they banned them? I haven't heard that.
Well, that's what the caller
said. Okay, maybe they have.
We're talking a bit about regulations at a time when there is an anti-regulation sentiment abroad. We'll take a little break, talk about that, and I want to talk about safety for artists, because one of the most terrible stories recently is the story of the ghost ship fire in Oakland. Our number here is 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter. My handle is at Leonard Lopate. My guest is Manona Russell, founder and president of Arts, Crafts, and Theater Safety. Stay with us for more. And we're back with industrial hygienist Manona Russell, R-O-S-S-O-L. Her latest book is Pick Your Poison, How Our Mad Dash to Chemical Utopia is Making Lab Rats of Us All. It's published by Wiley. I want to talk about Oakland, but first we have a couple of questions that have come in, I think, that are important. Katie in Brooklyn asks, I'm planning on burning some candles at my holiday party. How do I tell if the candles are safe and non-toxic? What kinds are best?
Well, there's absolutely no safe candle. I mean, you just have to realize that it is, first, fire, and second of all, it's burning wax, which is going to produce hydrocarbons and all kinds of stuff, formaldehyde. No, it's just, it just isn't. Does that mean don't use them? No. But, I mean, just be aware that anything that is burning in your house is creating pollutants. So I certainly want a candle once in a while. I think it's kind of cheery, but I am fully aware of what the difficulties are.
What about scented candles? I have a feeling those scents are not the best thing for me.
And they weren't meant to be burned, and so you have even more pollutants with those scents. And some people are allergic to the scents to start with.
Arlene from Syosset, you're on the air.
Hello. Yes, I purchased some toys for my grandsons this year that I realized after I got them they were not, well, none of them are made here. They're all made in China. Most of them are made in China.
Not after not after January 20th.
Is that right? Well, maybe I better wait. But I'm wondering how safe they are. They don't have that ASTM thing written on it. I've called the companies that I bought them from. I probably shouldn't mention them on the air. And they've assured me that that they check everything that they sell. And one of the toys is actually from China, and it's a Hong Kong company. It's not even a company from the U.S. So how safe would they be?
Well, it's the difficulty is that the agencies don't have a budget for really checking everything that comes in. So you're really depending on the importer to have done due diligence there. If you trust that importer, if that's a big importer, they don't like recalls. That's expensive. So if it's a big importer, a reputable company, there's a really good chance that they have done some due diligence.
Thank you for calling. I mentioned earlier I wanted to talk a bit about the ghost ship fire in Oakland that claimed 36 lives. Most of these people in the 20s and 30s. Have you been following the investigation?
Oh, yes. And I read, just last night I went through again the biographies of all 36. And what an incredible loss that is.
Why were so many people trapped in the building and unable to get out?
Well, since that's also my area, since I'm safety officer for IATSE, this is a big problem in venues all over the country. This is not just here, in Oakland. It's a difficulty with high rents. So people do set up venues that they really shouldn't be setting up as venues.
Well, this is a warehouse that was used as a performance venue,
living space
and artist studios.
And I can't tell you how often that is done.
Now, there are rules about whether you can live in your artist studio in New York, although I suspect some people break those rules. But are they dangerous to live in?
Of course. You don't have the same kinds of fire protection. And the reason that that building wasn't even looked at is for many years it was just a warehouse and it was empty. So they say it wasn't inspected for 30 years, but it really wasn't being used that much for part of that time.
But it was storing things that were highly flammable.
Well, combustible primarily. You know, old wooden pallets, and, pianos, and trash, and artists' materials, and so on. I mean, you only have to just remember, if you were in a university, what the individual artist studios looked like. That is where the problem starts, because the schools do not teach the safety that they should be teaching. So artists think, well, I'll keep this little scrap of this and this, and I'll pile this up, and I'll just, maybe I'll use it one day in a painting or something. And in fact, even when I went to school 100 years ago, if you had a neat studio, that was the kiss of death. You just were clearly not going to be a real artist. So we have to get over that and teach people that you have to have a clear way of getting out of every place that you're in. You have to have organization and cleanliness.
But what about in a building like this, smoke alarms and sprinkler system? Shouldn't they have been in place?
They aren't even required there, unfortunately. Now, with high storage, you have to have sprinkler systems if they find you, if they inspect you and see that that's what you need. But if you, the difference between the standards for a warehouse and for a residence are quite dramatic, because if you're going to have people living there and they're going to be sleeping and eating and cooking and things, there has to be much more fire regulations met.
Are the rules different? We're in an area where there are artists all over the place. They're in Long Island. They're in a lot of towns in New Jersey, all along the Hudson Valley now. Artists are moving up to spaces in Kingston and towns like Hudson. Are any places safer than others?
Well, I guess if you wanted to look for a safe place, you would look for a place that is well run administratively. If you have a really good community set up where you have a mayor that really cares about the city, who is following the rules, who is making sure things are being enforced. But the problem is, in New York, we have like little tiny enclaves that the regulators don't even know about, that things have happened before they've become fully aware that this is happening there. And I'm sure that was the same kind of situation in Oakland.
You're talking about places that have been converted to artist studios or mixed use. There's in Greenpoint, I know of a building that used to just be for artists, and now they're putting offices in there and using it for other things as well.
That's always been the
pattern. That's because it's, you know, where the artists are, then other people want to be.
Yeah, and so really the artists are the colonizers of the abandoned buildings and the warehouses and the places that you can't really use for much, because they're not up to code. And then as soon as they make it fashionable, then you have people coming in and saying, well, now this is good real estate, now let's kick the artists out and make it into condos.
That's why they're going in the Hudson Valley now.
Absolutely.
We are talking with Monona Russell, and we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page, wnyc.org/Lopate, or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. This is WNYC, wnyc.org, and we got lots of calls coming in, so let's try to get to as many as we can. Could you keep your questions brief so we can get to all of those calls? Diane from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. My question is about a light therapy. You know, they make these contraptions with fluorescent lights, and it's supposed to be a treatment for seasonal affective disorder. And they also note that there's no UVA rays in these things, but at the same time, you know, and they say that it's not effective unless you know, it reaches the retina, but they do recommend that you don't look directly at it all the time, that you sort of sit at a 45-degree angle and every once in a while look at it. So what is your opinion on this?
Doesn't all of what you've just said tell you that they don't really know?
What about fluorescence? Because we haven't talked about fluorescence.
Yeah, you have to look at the whole.
Diana's talking about fluorescent bulbs. Are they any safer?
Well, there are fluorescents and there are fluorescents because you can literally control the spectrum that comes off a fluorescent light. You can have full spectrum fluorescence that will mimic sunlight beautifully. So, I mean, it depends on what that fluorescent light is meant to do. But this is not a proven solid piece of research here on this.
But we're talking about fluorescent bulbs. Tesla invented fluorescent bulbs. That's a long time ago. After he invented alternating current, he came up with fluorescent light bulbs. We're talking about 100 and something years ago.
Oh, yeah, but, you know, they just found that a particular laxative that we've been using 100 years is a potent carcinogen. Nobody tests anything. So, but we know enough about light so that we know which types will cause damage to the lens in terms of cataract. That's the infrared. And we know all the different A, B, and C UV light spectrum. I mean, it's a continuum. And all of these different parts of that spectrum have different effects on the body. So maybe this disorder where people have trouble sleeping and so on, maybe it can be helped with light. But it's not a nice, firm, solid bit of research.
On June 22nd of this year, President Obama signed into law the Frank R. Lautenberg Chemical Safety for the 21st Century Act, which amends the Toxic Substance Control Act from 1976. Is this the only law that regulates chemicals in this country?
Well, practically the only one at that level.
Is it substantially better than the
other
one?
Oh, please. Oh, it just breaks my heart. When I wrote the book in 2011, I did a Senate staff briefing with Earth Justice, and they wouldn't let me talk about the central point of the book, which is there are millions of chemicals, and we need massive testing. There are 30,000 high production volume chemicals on which there's no data. I was not happy with the bill even then because it was a revolving list of 200 chemicals. Now it's down to 20, and there's five that have to be tested in the next 5 years. Well, that's just going elephant hunting with a pea shooter. I just can't understand why people can't understand that we have millions, literally millions, of chemicals. There are the Chemical Abstract Service. ChemCats has 32 million chemicals that are available for catalog purchase right now. We don't know who's buying those, where they're going, but somebody needs to test the chemicals that we're using, and that bill is not going to do it.
And the mood of the country seems to be to go in the opposite direction.
Yeah, how much less regulation can we have? I mean, it's just rootin' tootin' shootin' out there now.
We've been talking about artists and studios. Different artists use different kinds of things. Some use flammable chemicals and solvents. They use kilns, they have furnaces, welding torches. If I'm next to somebody who's doing something like that, and I'm just a painter using acrylics, am I in danger?
Well, of course. There has to be control in that building. And there are rules about where you can weld. And if you know the rules well enough, you can really make things safer in your building and get some regulation. But I will say this, since you brought up the artist and materials right after the Lautenberg bill, EPA did do a very interesting thing last week, and that is one of the chemicals they have proposed for investigation is pigment violet 29. Now, that's in some art materials, but the most important thing is it's an organic pigment. If they find that that really is an environmental hazard, artists are going to have a very interesting disposal problem, because right now the only thing they have to worry about are the metal-regulated pigments, the lead, chromium, cadmium kinds of colors. But if they find out, as they suspect, that some of these organics are also environmental problems, we're going to have to collect paint waste for disposal.
Marjorie from Manhattan, you're on the air.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Hello.
Go ahead, Marjorie.
Okay. I used to make crafts out of cat food lids, and then I found out that PA to line the cat food lids, and since I handled them a lot, I was wondering, is there a problem with something like that for me or the cats? I mean,
well, you mean BPA. Bisphenol A.
Yeah.
Right.
PBA. Okay.
PBA.
Yeah, you're getting it right now, though, from other sources. We're just literally picking this stuff up. If you're looking at your computer now, stuff is falling out of it. I mean, you might as well not worry about this small source, really. It didn't help you any, but it's mixed up with so many other things that are happening to you almost every day that I probably wouldn't obsess over it.
Now, you've just made me feel like there's no place I could be safe.
Well, that's what's called risk assessment. What your whole life is a risk assessment. You stand on the curb and you make a determination on the risk of crossing that street. You need
Standing on the curbs, because some drive right onto the sidewalk.
Absolutely. So every minute of your life you are in danger, and it's about time you realize it. And then just simply say, okay, that's a risk I'm willing to take. That's a risk I'm not willing to take. I can mitigate this risk. I can't mitigate that one. But it's just part of the game. And there's no point getting upset about it, because this is just the way it is. But the more you know, the longer you live.
And people can write to our show page, and you will answer their questions, because we couldn't get to all of the questions of our listeners. Our show page is wmyc.org/lowpaint. You can read Winona's latest book, which is Pick Your Poison, How Our Mad Dash to Chemical Utopia is Making Lab Rats of Us All. It's from Wiley. And Winona, as always, it's been a scary pleasure having you on our show.